T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Ray Ratto is, of course, brought to you by the Indiana Fight Song all week long. All week long. How about this? Until IU's out of the top 25. Until we get knocked out of the top 25. There it is. Ray Ratto. Look at him. He's rooting for IU with one finger.
He's putting up the number one.
I can see it on the He's putting number one.
No, that's the letter I.
Oh, there it is. The block I. All right. Welcome, everyone. It's officially time for our good friend Michael Irvin, who is brought to you by Audi Marin and VW Marin. It is wonderful to have the playmaker, the Hall of Famer, joining us. And boy, what a difference a couple of weeks makes after just an embarrassing outing against the Miami Dolphins. The 49ers have started to right that ship. They did it by looking good on the line of scrimmage, and they did it against the Rams, and now they just went embarrassed. The New England Patriots, 33-6. Michael Irvin, thank you for joining us here, Damon Ratto and Kolsky, for a conversation that we always look forward to. The 49ers basically ripped the soul out of the Patriots. I thought that they would win the game, but I didn't think it was going to be that convincing. What was your more surprising takeaway from the game? How crisp the 49ers looked, or how just rusty and bad the New England Patriots were?
I honestly, guys, you know, mine went right to the 49ers because we have been having these conversations. You know, we had conversations about about Garoppolo, and then, you know, of course, last week he plays better, but he got the ball out of his hands quicker. What I saw this weekend, and I'll tell you my thought when I was watching the game, of course, like I do, I watch it again today. I thought to myself, first of all, and at first third down, when Garoppolo squeezed out and went in, I said, oh, he got a little something extra in him. You know, Garoppolo had something extra. I said, okay. I underestimated the connectivity and everything, probably the love that they had for Gropp. Like they wanted to go back and win for him. And I said to myself when I was watching that game, wait a minute. I might have been wrong. They may be able to compete without Bosa and without Thomas with the rest of the West. Because remember we talked about this. I said, you remember we talked about, I said, you know, you win a lot of games, but when you start playing those upper echelon teams, you know, you'll really miss Bosa and all. I was like, man, maybe I was wrong. That's just a great job that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch has done to stock that team. Look at the difference. When you see teams playing backups all around the league, it's automatic loss. Not with San Francisco and the job those guys are doing. It's an incredible job.
That said, when you watch the way the game played out, almost from the start, did you wonder if, in fact, they were playing the Patriots? Because Bill Belichick has not had a team with no offense or discernible defense since 2000. And as good as the 49ers were, nobody should be that good against that team unless something has gone tragically wrong.
So you're asking if the Patriots are in a horrible spot, or how surprising is it to see the Patriots look that bad? Or, my God, I didn't think – I just knew Cam – would play much better than Cam played in this game, especially coming off what happened in the Denver game. All of that would be true. So I'm absolutely surprised by how bad they look. But this has always been truth. Any team that's a physical football team always gives. You always give New England Patriots some trouble. And I don't know why, because I took New England to win that game because I thought it'd be a bounce back game, and I thought the injuries in San Francisco would make it hard. But I thought about it. I said, man, what am I doing? Any physical team, physical, really physical, and San Francisco is really physical. They give New England trouble, and you certainly did yesterday.
So you kind of mentioned it already in your first answer, Michael, but I wanted to ask you a little more about that Jimmy Garoppolo play, because I think those of us in the media love to say things like, oh, that, you know, I bet that inspired the team. They must get a ton of juice from that. But as, say, a wide receiver, what does that do for you? Can that really give you an extra boost just seeing your quarterback, you know, put it on the line to get a first down for you?
Yeah, it does. It says something to you when you see that. Make no mistakes about it. You know, we know all the rules are made for the quarterback not to get hit. And when a quarterback says, no, this is what it is, and they put it on the line like that, that was the first third down. We got a whole bunch of game left to play in here. Like, okay, Jimmy, you know, let's not do anything to get hurt this early. It's not a game winner. You know, you can't win the game in the first quarter. You know, we got to wait the fourth quarter. So let's not do anything crazy here. But he did, and it does hype you. It gets you ready to play, and I thought that was big yesterday. Especially now. Remember now, this Garoppolo playing against the guy that replaced him, and everybody was in love with the way Cam Newton was running the football early on. So, you know, I got some of that in me, too. And he showed that first thing. Let me tell you where that stuck out. That blew my mind, dude. That blew my mind. On that third down, on another third down, that was one-on-one. George Kittle and the best defensive back in the National Football League, Stephon Gilmore. And he ran that out route and beat Gilmore. I thought to myself, that's amazing right there. I mean, we got wide receivers that cannot get open with Gilmore. That's why he won Defensive Player of the Year. And he was lined up one-on-one outside with Kittle, and Kittle caught that third down out. And he was open for it. So I thought that was amazing. Amazing play, amazing throw.
It was really something else, and Tony Romo just went full-on man crush explaining how special he was and how special he is. And you got to give Bill Belichick credit, because he kind of took Kittle away most of the day. It wasn't a prolific day of George Kittle, but that's what he does. He makes you play left-handed. And Jeff Wilson Jr. more than answered the bell. He is the first 49er to rush for three touchdowns on the road since Roger Craig did that. So it's been a long time. Unfortunately, he goes on IR, and the parade of injuries continue. Sadly, Michael, to Deebo Samuel, who also made some big plays and runs. I mean, he is a wide receiver who just happens to play running back as well. Or maybe it's the other way around. I do not know. But if there's no Deebo for the next 2 weeks now, how much chance do you give Brandon Ayuk for really being the guy who carries the load? Because he might be the best rookie wide receiver in this very talented rookie wide receiver class.
Right, right. And he has the blessings of being coached by that coach. You know, a guy that knows how to fit your talent into his system to get the most out of it. That was the best. I hate that Deebo Samuel's not, because I remember I told you, even one of those plays, it was down on the goal line. It was just goal line run. You see where you are. He locked in with the corner. I mean, he was blocking them hard. Because I was watching these things. You know, they're not the biggest people in the world. They're not the biggest guys in the world. But they play big and they play hard. He plays big and he plays hard. I saw when Deebo Samuel kind of hurt himself. He was, you know, when he ran a little pitch out of the backfield. And it looked like he was trying to slap the guy across his helmet. Like, get out of here. Like, you know, like I'm going to pimp slap you. Like, bam. And then he went over and then grabbed his leg on the sideline, but he's just so strong. He, and first of all, I mean, he's a wide receiver that plays running back. running backs can't go outside and track the ball the way he tracks the ball. See, that's a wide receiver tracking the ball. Running backs, you can't line them up out wide and tell them to run deep routes because they can't watch that ball because their whole lives they've been catching short passes. So it's harder for them to track the long passes because they haven't had any work at that. So Debo Samuel, he knows how to track those balls. So he's a wide receiver that can play running back because there are a few real running backs, pure running backs, that can go out wide and play wide receiver.
So talking about the running backs, I mean, Raheem Mostert looks like one of the, you know, comes out of nowhere, looks like one of the best guys in the league. He gets hurt. Jerick McKinnon has a couple big games. He stops being effective. Jeff Wilson has a big game. Now he's hurt, and Jermichael Hasty comes in and is running for 6-plus yards a carry. How much of this is the Niners are finding running backs that are actually quite good, just not drafted, and how much of it is the scheme is just so good that almost anyone could do it?
Well, it's some of all of that. They're certainly finding the running back that fit their system. It's not the first time we've seen this now. We've seen this in the first Shanahan version, when Mike Shanahan was in Denver. Remember the running backs they brought in? Every time they brought in a one-cut running back, he took off. His career took off, and they were bringing those guys in. This is the Shanahan 2.0. Same thing, because he's so great at designing runs and finding the talent that fit into his system. One cut. You see that cut? Take that cut. Now run. I mean, it's amazing. I saw somebody do an interview, and they were talking about, well, we have faith, talking about Kyle Shanahan, we have faith that the genius is going to come up with some. This is one of the players. I don't recall which player it was, but they were saying, we have faith that the genius is always going to come up with something, and he really does. He always comes up with something.
Michael Irvin, that was the 27-point margin of defeat, the Patriots' largest home loss since 1998. And look, there's an awful lot that the Patriots aren't right now. But I do think that the Niners pretty much hammered the nail in the coffin of the dynasty. An incredible 20-year run. Feels like it's now officially over, and building towards the future is more realistic than getting it all back together and making a playoff appearance this year for Bill Belichick, Robert Kraft, and really the entire Patriots organization. If the Niners did indeed play a part of the role of ending it, that's great. But just from someone who was on one of the more successful football teams of all time, how hard is it to sustain success in this league? And if the Patriots are indeed dead, let's honor them with a proper funeral, because they were, for two decades, basically reigning over this entire league with terror.
You know, as you were asking the question, I was like, now where can I get this and just take this from him and use it elsewhere? Did the Niners just put a nail in the coffin of that 20-year run that we have all been just possessed with and taken over by it for the last 20 years? They took over the NFL for the last 20 years, and that's what it looked like. Now, here's the kicker to that. They play Buffalo. They'll be playing Buffalo. Yeah, Buffalo's number one in the East. If they can turn around some kind of way and beat Buffalo, they're back in the thick of things, at least trying to get a chance to get the East. Now, we got that 7th team also. Does the dynasty end if they don't make the playoffs? Or if they do make the play, if they make the playoffs, is it still officially running even if they don't get to the Super Bowl? You know what I mean? What's the cutoff to say this dynasty is definitely dead? If you definitely don't make the playoffs, then we can officially say the dynasty is dead. But I still think they have a shot at making the playoffs.
The NFC is a different situation because one of the teams in your favorite division is going to keep out a team that's either going to be 10-6 or 11-5. With the probability that team would be a team in the NFC West, which team, A, do you think that would be? And B, how would said team avoid being that team? Because it seems like 11-5 is a lot to ask for anybody, especially the teams in that division because they play each other and knock each other off all the time. So how would you look at the NFC West from this point on with the likelihood that somebody's going to get jobbed?
And not make the playoffs, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know. I thought about that. I thought that it could be, you know, can we get three teams? Is it possible to get those three teams out of the West with that extra team getting in there now?
It's possible, but, I mean, there are other teams that have pretty good records so far that have much easier schedules down the stretch.
Yeah, man, listen, that schedule stuff, and I know we like to play on that strength of schedule and all of that. It's going to be hard. You go through the North, okay, Chicago. I'm trying to figure out Chicago, Green Bay, Minnesota's falling off the South. Tom Brady and Carolina falling a little bit. So there's a possibility. There's a possibility that we see three teams coming out of the West. I mean, there really is a possibility of that. And now, even more so, because who would you say in the West? You got Seattle, you got Arizona right there. Are you thinking San Fran? Because the San Fran team I saw yesterday, I thought they could compete with Seattle and with Arizona. I wouldn't necessarily capitulate and give up winning the West, let alone talk about possibly sneaking in a third team. That's what I'm telling you. When I saw that game yesterday, I was like, maybe I was wrong. Maybe they can win all of this, even with those two guys injured, that I thought there's no way they can play with the big boys without those two guys. And I obviously I'm thinking I may have been wrong with that.
Michael Irvin, well, appearing courtesy of Audi Marin and VW Marin. The next 3 weeks for the Niners are huge, at Seattle, against the Packers, and at New Orleans. We will know an awful lot more after that. Michael, we have to bring it up to a subject that I know you've been, I'm sure, just wondering and scratching your head, what is wrong? Because it's one thing to be a bad team. It's another thing to quit. And I think the Dallas Cowboys just quit on an NFL game and quit on Andy Dalton when John Bostic essentially decapitated him and no one even came over to see what's what.
Yeah, and that was hard to watch. First of all, that was just a vicious hit, you know, and it told you the mindset of each of those teams. That team came to play football, and we know when a guy's sliding, he's giving himself up, and Boston should have acknowledged that and realized that, but that team obviously came to play football, and they were physical. They were physical up front. I sat there and watched that game, and I felt for Andy Dalton, but I seriously said, man, the Cowboys, this is an all-time low right now where this team is, you know. And honestly, I believe the Cowboys right now may be the worst team in the National Football League. You know, I know the Jets haven't won a game, but would you take the Jets over the Cowboys? Would you take the Cowboys over the Jets right now? How can anybody pick the Cowboys at any time when you see what's happening, especially on that defense, especially what's going on with that defense? And it's just I don't even know how to explain this. This is just an all-time low for my Dallas Cowboys. And it's it hurts. It hurts. I'm going to talk. I'm going to bring it on Darryl Johnson because he did the game on my podcast. And we're going to do the autopsy here. This thing is dead. We got to go in and find out what caused this thing to die like this. It's basically an autopsy because there's nothing. There's no way. This Cowboys right now honestly look like. They honestly look like the worst team in the National Football League. And the difference is, I know the Jets look bad, but the Jets were expecting to look bad. The Cowboys had people really thinking, including myself, that they were ready to be Super Bowl bound, and they've been a super bust.
Given how awful it's been, what are the chances that that's one and done for Mike McCarthy?
I don't think that's a real possibility, but I just think because of the off season. Now, if he had a whole off season to do everything, and this comes down like this, then everybody, this could have been a one and done situation. It's just such a unique off season that we all had to battle through and endure, and then you came up with so many crazy injuries that they're having to endure. I was telling a friend of mine, if you have your offensive line and one guy goes down, you can try to hide that, but you lose both offensive tackles. Your center retires before the year. You get a backup in Looney. Then he gets hurt. You only have your guard, Zach Martin. Then he gets hurt. You're playing with four or five offensive linemen backups. When it's one in there, you can hide them a little. But when it's four or five, there is no hiding. And everybody got on the line of scrimmage and said, we're just coming at these guys. And there was nothing you could do. I was on the show the other day saying, I need these fat men, the other fat men, 300-pounders, for 3 damn seconds. It's not that hard. But obviously, it's much harder than it is. Than it looks.
It's starting to become rumor season as the trade deadline starts to loom. And today, the Cowboys, I guess, have made it known that Everson Griffin is available. From what you know, being closer there than anybody else, is he a good get? Are there things that people should be wary about when a team says, hey, we're willing to listen to offers, and they make that public?
Well, listen, he can still get to the quarterback. He can still play. Now, I don't know if there's issues going on within the locker room or because when a guy comes over, like Everson Griffin, he came over thinking, just what we were talking about earlier, oh, this team has a shot to get to the Super Bowl. And then he sees this team playing like this, and he's a part of this team. Whatever issues you may have thought there's a possibility of having with him, those issues arise because now he's disgruntled. He's here, and he doesn't want to be here because he thought he was latching on to a Super Bowl team. So then you got to consider making him available. You have to consider making him available. And if I'm a team out here that think I can make a run and I need another pass rusher, I have to consider looking at that because he would be an issue, and it's not that he would be an issue if you were winning, but now that you're not winning and it looks bad, then he may be that issue. So if I'm a winning organization that needs some quarterback, that needs to get some pressure on the quarterback, then I would have to look into that.
Michael, let's talk about this Monday nighter tonight because another big one is happening with the Bears in Los Angeles to take on the Rams, who are better than I think anyone thought that they were going to be. The Bears are better than I think a lot of people thought that they were going to be, and it feels like this is a sneaky big Monday night football game tonight.
Yeah, sneaky big. It's going to be big. Now, here's because yesterday, right, I take Chicago, and then today I'm like, well, I hear about Khalil Mack possibly, being questionable. I was like, wait a minute. If Khalil Mack don't go, I want to change the whole thing. I want to change my pick. Khalil Mack is the key to everything. That's how they beat Tampa, because they were able to get pressure on Tom Brady with the first four, with the four down rushers. 19 pressures, 16 of them were with just the front four. When you can get the guys with just the front four, it's hard. It's hard to beat that defense because they can drop seven and play coverage and the front four still gets to you quickly. It's hard to play that defense. But in order for that front four to be as dangerous and as ferocious, you need Khalil Mack in the lineup. But this is a good one. This is a good one. Watch a lot of quick stuff, quick sets, because Sean McVay knows they're not going to hold on to the ball like no risk it, no biscuit had Tom Brady holding on to the ball. He's going to get the ball out of Jared Goff's hands quickly, to make sure he tries to nullify that rush.
No risk it, no biscuit. Somebody write that down. That's good. Michael Irvin, always good. Such a pleasure to talk with you each and every Monday. Thank you so much, and we're already looking forward to next week when the Niners got a huge one up in Seattle. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's going to be a great game too, man. I can't wait to see that game. I can't wait to see it, buddy. All right, guys.
There he is, Michael Irvin. You know, it really is almost amazing to watch a close game with Russell Wilson come down to the wire, and Russell Wilson's walking off the field a loser. What a game last night for Kyler Murray, who was basically asked to go out and win that game 2-3 different times. And you had Cliff Kingsbury, who I think we all are looking at as, hey, he knows what he's doing. He's pretty good at this. But he made what can only be described as a questionable decision to kick that field goal on second down. He had two plays to run a little bit more, but with Wilson taking a, or I should say with Kyler Murray taking a sack on first down there, he got all nervous. They kicked the field goal, missed it, and oh, here comes Seattle. No. A rare interception, and the Arizona Cardinals hand the Seahawks their very first loss of the year. I tell you, I know it was supposed to be Brady and the Buccaneers against Vegas, and it was going to be the big coming out party for Allegiant Stadium on Sunday Night Football. But given the way that that game was a snoozer in the fourth quarter, that was about as good of a cherry on top of a great weekend in sports as you were going to see.
I think we owe Trent Brown an apology and a thank you. You know, if not for him, we all would have watched Tampa blow out the Raiders after the Niners blew out New England. Instead, we got maybe the best game of the day. And by the way, the morning had like four or five games going down to the final seconds, all right before the Niners game kicked off. It was a great day of sports.
I love that. There's nothing better than watching that 10 a.m. window come to a close and that 15-minute staggered end right when you're getting ready for the – oh, it was good. It's so good.
I have bad news for you all then.
Uh-oh.
John Gruden said today that the Raiders are on the cutting edge of beating the virus.
Hey now.
Come on.
Well, let's
you're the doctor, John. You've handled it so well so far. And secondly, you gifted America one of the best games of the year because your guys can't wear a mask. So, you know, there's always one guy who's going to spit in the stew pot, and it's Gruden.
Because
I think from this point on, and if you look at the schedule this weekend, you're going to throw up in your mouth realizing that the Sunday night game, as horrible as it seems, is Cowboys-Eagles. And then Monday, it's Bucks-Giants.
Yeah.
And at some point, somebody's got to figure out, we're going to have to start flexing some of these NFC West games into places where people can see them rather than 75% of the worst division in the history of the NFL.
Flex the NFC East out of the league this year, much less off your television in a marquee primetime game. Wow, yeah, please. Let's
pretend
do a little
they're
bit
all
better
playing,
than that.
Yeah. Pretend they're all playing in Europe and play them at 6:30 in the morning.
Not bad. Not bad at all. Think of the college game day. You'd only have to get up at like 3 a.m. to get ready for pregame. Anyways, we got to take a real quick break. A big, long segment indeed that was. We thank Michael Irvin once again and our friends up at VW Marin and Audi Marin. Good stuff. Great stuff from Michael Irvin here on 95.7 The Game. When we come on back, we got wide open phones. Let me ask you, who made Bill Belichick look worse this weekend? Kyle Shanahan or Brady? Because they both took bites out of Bill's reputation this weekend. 888-957-9570. And we are brought to you, are you ready for an Exergen temperature check? It is 72 and clear in beautiful downtown San Francisco.
Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Seriously, who made Bill Belichick look worse this weekend? Kyle Shanahan winning that chess match, or Tom Brady playing great and winning loudly, still in the NFL, and maybe the quarterback of the best team in a conference? I mean, who is laughing harder? I don't think that the 49ers have that much to laugh about right now. They got enough problems of their own. But Tom Brady, he's got to be sitting so pretty right now. He threw a touchdown. He ran for another. He threw for four touchdowns. He ran for another. He was 33 of 45 passing for 369 yards, no interceptions. Players in the Super Bowl era to throw four or more touchdowns and run for one or more scores. Well, Tom Brady yesterday, Aaron Rodgers in 2019, and Billy Volek, of all people, did it back in 2004.
Billy Volek,
yeah.
Of the Titans?
Yeah, could have been, or maybe he had moved on to San Diego by then, because I think that the Raiders actually won that game, so it could have been a division game. But that is a Josh Dubose special. I saw him tweet that one.
Of course it is.
Thought that was pretty damn good. And then
only
you got
Josh
Kyle.
Dubose could pull that out. By
really?
The way.
So you got Tom Brady kind of like laughing all the way to the bank. 2 years, $50 million. Do you think that there's a little seller's remorse on Brady right now, given the quarterbacking situation? And I don't think Brady's having a four touchdown, let me run for another day in New England. Like, that's how hard it is to find their weaponry. There isn't a lot of talent on that team for whatever reason offensively, or there certainly doesn't look to be that much in the wake of Tom Brady pulling his boat out of town. I mean, it's something else. And then you got Kyle Shanahan in there, and it's the rare, hey, Bill, let me show you to the buffet by halftime. I mean, the game was over at halftime. Talk about how embarrassing of a day it was, the final numbers, all this. When's the last time Bill Belichick's day was over at halftime? Because that's how that game played out yesterday.
The last time I can remember that, they came back and won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was also against Kyle Shanahan, kind of.
Tom Brady is clearly the guy laughing his ass off harder. But in fairness, Ronald Jones is a better running back than anybody the Patriots have. And Chris Godwin and Mike Evans and Rob Gronkowski are light years better than whoever Bill Belichick has to throw to. So part of what's happened here is that Brady left a year after everything else about that offense went south, but he's still enjoying it. As for Shanahan, he's enjoying it in a different way, because I think his team needed one of those, a game where not necessarily that they won by four scores, but that they did whatever they wanted to do, whenever they wanted to do it, within the parameters of what the 49ers are, which is a run first team, that a ball control first team, and a team that frankly makes you have to outscore them in half the time. There's something like mathematically brilliant about that, which is, I don't know how many points we're going to get, but you're going to have to equal us only with 50% of the possessions, or actually 33% of the possessions.
Yeah, but that only works if you're having success. And I would point out that last week, Ray, you specifically said that you thought Belichick would take away the run and let Kittle have a day, and that would be the way that he would slow down the Niners. And if failed, right? He utterly failed to do that. So I think that's a huge win for Kyle Shanahan. But I do think that Brady's the more interesting story here. And I think we criticized him, among others, and fairly, early in the year. I think people criticized his ability last year because there were throws he missed, and that's a thing. But right now, he just looks like a highly professional quarterback getting used to his new offense. And that throw he made to Scotty Miller is as good as any throw any quarterback can ever make. I mean, it was a deep bomb dime against pretty good coverage. So when he's doing that, when he's throwing the outside shoulder contested catch to Gronk, like, you could tell he was feeling it. And the last couple weeks really feel like the first times, really, frankly, three of the last 4 weeks, with the exception of the game where he was absolutely harangued and harassed by the Bears' defensive line, he's been brilliant. And he looks like a guy who's getting comfortable in the new offense and putting all of his skills and experience to work with a ton, as you guys point out, of talent. And that, to me, is the biggest difference. I think what we're learning is, even though Tom Brady is 43 or whatever, and we all assumed that finally his skills had faded considerably, and that was why it had been a rough year or two, It turns out, I mean, look, he's not 30-year-old Tom Brady, but he still slings it about as good as anybody when he's comfortable and has talent around him. So, you know, shame on us, I suppose.
By the way, the talent around him, it's about to get better. Antonio Brown shows up in 2 weeks to play with an already 5-2 looking really good Tampa Bay Buccaneers team.
And they're not even using Mike Evans, right? Like, Mike Evans is an afterthought right now, and they're still putting up ridiculous passing numbers.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Chris Godwin is finally healthy. And it's instructive that he wasn't there for Chicago at a time when, you know, they couldn't find Gronk and they didn't throw the ball at all to Miller. So, you know, the Bears get credit for taking some of that away. But also, you know, the other three games, the Chargers, he had at least two guys to throw to at all times. Green Bay, he had three guys to throw to. Yesterday, he had four guys to throw to. So if you keep Tom Brady upright, he's not going to screw you. And I think that was one of the problems last year, is that Brady couldn't stay upright because there was nobody to hand the ball off to, unless you believe that Rex Burkhead is the future. And there was nobody to throw to because they have nobody to throw to.
It's really bad. So, that's the thing that stands out the most, is the Patriots receivers. I mean, Edelman is not healthy, and so he's not really able to be himself. And none of the guys they've drafted or added over the last few years can play at all.
N'Keal Henry is not who they thought that he was going to be, not even
close. No, the Niners definitely got the better Arizona State product.
No doubt about it. Jimmy Garoppolo, it's so funny. At the risk of sounding way too much like three sports talk radio hosts, I think all of us were biting our bottom lip trying to point out and add interest and impact to Jimmy just picking up that early third down with his legs. Here it is, by the way. This is what it sounded like. Jimmy's big first down of the day, and it came with his legs, not with his arm.
Garoppolo, able to shake free, and he fights for that first down. Able to slip through a tackle attempt by Bentley.
This is an unbelievable job. You'll see the pressure comes right up the middle, and Garoppolo gets out of Renovich, and then Bentley at the very end. Great effort.
Again, it's one of those things where Tony Romo's a little telling the truth with the emotion in his voice. He sounded like he thought that that was a big play early on in the game. Michael Irvin, who joined us a little while ago, confirmed that is a big tone setter for the afternoon, and it really helped settle in the Niners to an incredibly successful 9-play, 75-yard opening drive, which they're punting. By the way, they didn't punt until the fourth quarter, late in the fourth quarter. One of those games where they almost didn't punt again. That's how good things were working for the 49ers in this one. But Jimmy Garoppolo was feeling it. He said that he was feeling the emotions being back in New England where he hadn't been since he left.
Yeah, it was a cool week. Just a lot of emotions, a lot of memories, especially coming back here, seeing the same stadium, hearing the same songs that they used to play. It was, a lot of memories came back, and it was a lot of emotions out there, but it was a fun night.
A lot of Dunkin' Donuts, a lot of lobster rolls back on the East Coast. It was a good day for Jimmy Garoppolo, even though there were two picks. He was who they needed him to be.
They're lobster rolls here. They're lobster rolls out there.
Is that lobster? The King of Harvard likes the lobster rolls.
That's breakfast back there.
Totally. I like it with the... No crust on the bun, the New England style bun. It's like a folded piece of white bread, and you got the white bread on the outside of the bun, and then they toast that. It's very good. Sam's Chowder House does a very nice duplication down there, and shout out Sam's. Anyway, okay.
Lobster.
So
it's delicious.
Lobster. Get some if you can. Jimmy Garoppolo, defense. Get some. If you can, and the 49ers brought an awful lot out there, and Jimmy says, hey, when that happens, beautiful things happen.
Yeah, it's, that group, you can't say enough about them. I think it starts with the D-line. Those guys, you know, get after the quarterback, especially when we get them a little lead like that. Just let the dogs loose and, just carries out. It's guys making plays. Well, we have four turnovers today. I mean, that's just, whenever you can do something like that as a defense, it helps the whole team. And I think we play great complimentary football, and, yeah, that's a great recipe for a win.
There's a lot wrong with the Patriots, but their running game until this weekend was not among what's wrong with the Patriots. The Patriots' offense was second in rushing yards per game going into this weekend at 167. They were held to 94 rushing yards as a team. Cam Newton, a dreadful day running the ball. He had just a bad day all around. He only had 19 rushing yards. My under came in with a nap. That was easy. Didn't sweat that one at all on his over-under rushing totals. By the way, the Niners covered the 2.5, as you can see. And, you know, I said it to Peter King last Tuesday, and I said it almost jokingly when I said, basically, I'm looking at this team. You shut down Rex Burkhead. You shut down the Patriots. And he was like, isn't that funny, just saying that out loud? Doesn't that sound like a funny thing to say? Well, Rex Burkhead was held to 12 rushing yards and 35 receiving yards, and it was like they didn't even have an offense all afternoon.
Yeah, that's only because they didn't. I mean, it's painful how inept, well, not just inept, but inert they were. I mean, part of it was they didn't have the ball. But the other part was when they did have the ball, they had literally zero weapons. I mean, they looked like the Jets when they had the ball. And that's not an exaggeration because the quarterback was poor. The backup quarterback was poor. They had no running back. They had no wide receivers. I don't even believe the tight end was a factor. They literally did nothing at all on offense.
Yeah, I mean, time of possession was basically 40-20, and that was part of it. But again, that happens fundamentally by one team getting first downs and the other team not. And all day, the Patriots were incapable. I mean, they were incapable at every level. And certainly, I want to give some credit to the Niners' defense, but part of that is this is not a very good offense. That said, what Fred Warner does, and I think we've sort of been talking about it more and more as the year's gone on, but like I said earlier, I think he's got to be in consideration for Defensive Player of the Year, non-DK Metcalf division. And he is as smart and quick to the spot. I don't know that he's the fastest guy or the – but it's kind of like what Richard Sherman does as an older player. His brain is so far ahead that he seems faster than he is because he's in – the right place all the time. And then Warner, for a guy who's not that big as a middle linebacker, is never afraid to deliver a blow. Like the guy really is as impressive and intelligent a middle linebacker as I think I've ever seen. And I mean, I grew up watching Briggs and Urlacher, and then I moved to the Bay and I watched Willis and Bowman. Like, I've seen a lot of good linebackers, and the one thing all those guys have in common that's different from Fred Warner is they were much bigger. But Warner seems to me to be pretty much just as good as most of those guys, and I just find him unbelievable.
I'm only going to say it because I used his name last week when I was talking about there are no great linebackers in football, really, anymore. You know, Ray Lewis is not walking through that door. And I'm not saying that Fred Warner is Ray Lewis. I'm not. But what a great linebacker is, and what Ray Lewis was constantly around the ball. This guy is constantly around the ball, whether he's making the tackle, whether he's running into the frame as the last player into the frame, whether he is part of the pile that is pulling a player down. Fred Warner is in and around everything this defense is doing to the positive. He's never part of the negative. He's never the guy making the mistake. And I got to tell you, that interception that he had, Lucas, play that interception for me. Play the interception of Fred Warner. And I know that we've cut it. I'm springing this on you. If hit me with it.
Here's the 11th play for the Patriots. And it's intercepted by Warner. And Newton is picked for the fifth time this season.
The hesitation there was to see if he had actually caught it. Because I'm going to tell you that not only did Fred Warner lead the 49ers in tackles, he made the best catch anybody in that football game made yesterday off the tips of his fingers. Better than Debo, yeah. Better than Ayuk, better than anyone wearing a Patriots uniform. That was the best catch of the day. It was one of the best catches all week in the NFL.
You know, when I watched that again this morning, I think Cam might have been throwing it away. Like, I think he might have been throwing it into the dirt at the feet of a receiver. Or it was just a really terrible throw. But it would have been almost inconceivable that Fred Warner would have been able to catch that ball, even if you had seen him cutting in front of the receiver.
Off his shoelaces, he took the ball.
If Newton was trying to throw the ball away, he would have hit Warner in the numbers.
It was that kind of day.
They don't play the same position, and they are not the same frame. Warner is a much bigger player. But in terms of commanding that defense, he screams Bobby Wagner to me.
Yeah.
Is Warner much bigger?
Is that true?
Oh, like 3 inches and about 35 pounds.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize he was that. I didn't realize Wagner was that small.
He's like Sam Mills.
Yeah. Mm. Well, he's not Sam Mills. Sam Mills, said he was 5'11". He was probably like 5'8". But Warner's listed at 6'3", 235.
Okay.
And Wagner is, I had it up here a minute ago. It's like 6'0", 6'2", 240. So, he's a lot shorter and squattier. And right. I think Warner probably moves a little better. But just in terms of having command of the 10 guys around him, they really do sort of, they ring alike to me.
You know, shorter is not necessarily the worst thing to be when you're the defensive player, because you hear get low, get leverage all the time. I think that when the Niners were playing the Rams, it was brought up about Aaron Donald, who wasn't having a good game, but Al Michaels was still trying to explain how good he was, and Chris Collinsworth was telling you that Aaron Donald's just having a rough night for a guy. And then they brought up the fact, he's not the biggest guy, and that probably helps him because he's always winning that leverage battle. If low man wins, being the low man, the smaller man isn't necessarily the worst thing, especially if you're also the stronger man in the room. And I'll tell you, I don't know what Fred Warner's bench is, but I bet you it's up there with anybody on this team. He is just an absolute beast out there, and he is wise beyond his young football years. Against Seattle, next week, up in Seattle, Fred Warner will be playing his 40th regular season start. That's it. By the way, 40 starts in 40 games, 40 career games. He's got instincts of someone who's played two or three times longer than he already has in his career.
Do we have by any chance the cut of Tony Romo explaining that interception, which happened right after the cut that we played? Because what he actually does on that play, and Baldy did a breakdown of it this morning as well, for those of you who want to just check out Brian Baldinger on Twitter. But essentially what he does is he's first tracking the heads of the offensive linemen to recognize that, it's a play action and not a run, realizes it's a pass, checks where the wide receiver is coming from, turns his hips around, checks the quarterback again, and then responds to the quarterback, realizing he's going to that wide receiver that he just saw to his left, but he's already turned his hips to the right so he can follow that wide receiver and cut in front for the interception. And that's all he had to do, all that, and be incredibly fast just to get to the point where he could make a ridiculous shoestring catch to actually make the interception. And it was just such a good example of Fred Warner being the smartest guy on the defense, one of the most capable coverage linebackers in the league, and one of the fastest linebackers in the league, and then able to be a playmaker enough to pull that ball in. I mean, he's one of the great success stories for the John Lynch drafting regime, to be totally honest. He and Kittle are probably the two greatest prizes so far in terms of value.
He identifies the plays like a green dot helmet wearer. He communicates the defense like the captain of the whole operation. He flips his hips like a cornerback when he has to go and peel off in coverage. And I think one of the comments was that Romo said they can depend on him in coverage so much. He's taking himself out of tackling opportunities because he's out there chasing Julian Edelman. I mean, he is taking away one of the best, shiftiest, hardest to, just wrap up little receivers in football. It's speed, it's power, it's recognition. It is, he's a really, really good football player. We've got 1 hour left today. We want to spend it with you. We want you to spend it with us. A huge, rousing, feels like they got back on track a little. But again, you cannot spell Niners without IR. And it looks like Jeff Wilson is on IR. And that's too bad because he was having himself a career day. When we come on back, our final hour is going to make it worth your while. If you missed any of Michael Irvin on with us, we have sliced it up. And we will go through the very best of the beef with Michael Irvin when we come on back around 5:30 this afternoon. But when we do return, the nail in the coffin. It really feels like the 49ers were driving the nail in the coffin yesterday of the Patriots as we knew them. Now, maybe they'll reintroduce themselves to us and we'll have a whole new team to meet. But as we knew them, it feels like that is over. We're going to talk about checkmate in a coaching mismatch. So don't you go anywhere. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!